I'm someone who loves trying out different makeup looks, but doesn't really wear much on a daily basis, so I like to focus on making sure I have high quality staples. And whether you like a fresh face, full glam, or somewhere in between, you've probably seen Thrive Cosmetics Viral Tubing Mascara. I've certainly seen it everywhere. You know, the one in the turquoise tube? So that mascara, along with all of Thrive Cosmetics' beauty products, are certified 100% vegan and cruelty-free, which I look for in makeup, and they've got excellent quality to match. And something I didn't know from all the mascara videos I've seen is that for every product sold, Thrive Cosmetics donates either that same product, another product that is needed more, or a monetary donation. They've worked with over 500 nonprofits to help with a wide range of causes like supporting cancer survivors, people experiencing homelessness, education access, and so much more. Knowing that makes me feel even better about using their products. And I do enjoy using them. Like I said, I like having high quality staples, and so my favorites are products that are multi-purpose, like the Brilliant Eye Brightener. It comes in a bunch of colors, and I like using them as eyeliner, eyeshadow, and even highlighter. Thrive Cosmetics is luxury beauty that gives back. Right now, you can get an exclusive 20% off your first order at thrivecosmetics.com/thrive. That's Thrive Cosmetics, CAUSEMETICS, .com/thrive for 20% off your first order. Calling all lovers of mystery. Prepare to don your detective hat in June's Journey, a free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective who is on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. Take a trip in time to the glitzy 20s to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. If, like me, you get sad when a story comes to a close, never fear. With June's Journey, the thrill is endless, since new chapters are added weekly. And not only can you enjoy the detective adventure, but you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island, where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
This podcast is being brought to you by Voyage AC. Honey, what are you doing?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm rearranging all my beautiful Voyage AC products. Aren't they beautiful?
Wow, they're gorgeous. But honey, there's so many bottles.
I know. I might have a little bit of a problem.
Yeah, you think so? But I think this one is my favorite.
Oh, which one? The Jasmine Coco or the Dirty Whore?
Wow, they're both really sexy.
Well, Melanie Apple really knows what she's doing. Get it?
Knows what she's doing. Yeah, I get it.
Voyage AC has it all. You have to check out all their beautiful candles, these incredible fragrances, fabulous beachwear, and gorgeous face and body products. So, hon, how can our listeners find Voyage AC?
You can find everything on their website at www.voyageac.com. That's VoyageEtcie.com.
And as you know, Melanie is willing to give my friends and family discount to all of our listeners right now. That's 10% off everything you buy.
All you need to do is enter the only one at checkout.
That's right. All you have to do is enter the only one when you make your purchase. Voyage AC is an olfactory journey of candles, perfume, and organic beauty products.
I'm Chris Cochran, and I'm the only one in the room humanizing cybersecurity. When I was in Silicon Valley, I was living in a $2.5 million house, doing really good in tech. And then somebody that was delivering food knocked on my door and he said, "Wow, do you play in the NFL?" Like that was the first thing he thought of. We're in the hub of technology. I'm a technologist. I'm a cybersecurity professional. So I think just exposing people to those things, that is an avenue for you to get out of whatever socioeconomic situation you're in, is going to help change the world.
I'm probably one of the few people I know who still looks forward to my Sunday newspaper. Not a digital copy that I read on my phone, but the real finger-staining, loud crinkling, section-by-section newspaper. The Sunday paper for me is a treat to be enjoyed while lounging in bed and sipping hot lemon water. So one day when we were going through all of the Only One stories that are being submitted to us, thank you for those, by the way. We love reading them. It was Scott's idea to record and release a few of them occasionally, but always on Sundays, and call them our Sunday edition. And because they're only 30 minutes long, our hope is that you can enjoy them while sipping your morning beverage. going for a walk, or even just enjoying a lazy Sunday at home. Please enjoy today's Sunday edition and be sure to listen every Tuesday when we drop another brand new episode of The Only One in the Room. Chris Cochran, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
Really well. It's so good to see you. You and I have seen each other before virtually, but never in person. But it's nice to see you again. Yeah.
Hey, good to see you.
And so I asked you, Chris, if you had two truths and a lie for Scott and I, and you do. So we're excited to hear them.
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll just rattle right through them. The first one is I'm a father of three beautiful boys. The next thing is that I spent some time teaching people how to break into places as a professional instructor, teaching lock picking, bypassing of alarm systems, things like that. And then my third thing is that we were nominated for a Webby for our podcast.
I'm jealous if that's true, by the way.
can you go first?
I think he's the father of three, but I'm not going to think it. I don't think it's all boys.
I agree. I think that's right, too.
Uh-huh. The other ones, I don't trust him yet. But I think he could teach people how to, he could be cybersecurity and cyber invasion.
Which is it, Chris?
Final answer?
Yes.
I'm actually the father of three girls.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
Hey, I was right because I followed Scott's lead, but I was still right. I got one. Thank you for that, Chris.
I'm the father of two girls.
Hashtag girl dads here on the podcast.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Special breed.
Very. So thank you for that. I am Laura Cathcart Robbins, and this is The Only One in the Room, special Sunday edition. But I am never the only one in this room because, as usual, my boyfriend, producer, and co-host, Scott Slaughter, who I call Hun, is here as well.
Hi, honey.
Hey, honey. So today, like I said, we are so pleased to be talking to Chris Cochran. He is the director of security engineering for a financial technology company, founder of Hacker Valley Media, and producer and host of the popular Hacker Valley Studio podcast. Chris is prior active duty U.S. Marine Corps intelligence, which led him to a career in cybersecurity. He has dedicated that career to building and leading advanced cybersecurity capabilities and professionals for organizations across many industries. His ultimate passion is finding and amplifying human stories in cybersecurity to inspire and enlighten our community. And this is a quote from Chris: "Cybersecurity is not technology-centric, in my opinion. It is human-centric. I am driven by my duty not only to protect people, but to enlist and inspire the next generation of cybersecurity professionals." So all of that is fascinating to me. I'm so in, and I can't wait to talk about this. Chris, I always start off by asking our guests how they identify.
He and him.
He and him. Okay, thank you. So you're a former U.S. Marine, right? Mm-hmm. And current director of security for a financial technology company, like I just said. When I think of cybersecurity or tech spaces, I think about 20 to 30-something white guys. That's what I picture.
Right.
You talked about feeling unwelcome at Langley. Can you talk to me about being a black man in those spaces and what that was like?
Yeah. So it was at the National Security Agency and Fort Meade. And I was a part of the intelligence apparatus in the United States Marine Corps. And that's when I really started to get my feel in cybersecurity. And quite often, when you get into that world, you want to dive into that world and be a part of the community. And being a part of that community is going to the conferences. The really big one is actually about to come up right now, which is Black Hat and DEF CON. And I got my first chance to do that while I was still attached to the government. But when you go into those spaces, they even had this game. I don't even know if they have it anymore, but they had this game called Spot the Fed, where you're trying to figure out who's the federal agent and all that, who's the government employee. And yeah. I wasn't going there to do any spying or anything. I just wanted to learn from people. But that kind of keeps you from wanting to share, like, what's your background? What do you do? And then also, there weren't many people that looked like me in those spaces. And so it was almost like I immediately had two strikes against me. And so I would kind of just wade sort of around and kind of lurk and listen, and I wouldn't really engage that much. And it really wasn't until much later in my career where I started to feel like I had a community.
Wow. So you weren't as welcome being from the federal government in those larger tech spaces, those conferences. I don't understand why.
When people think about the hacker space, so hacker really means someone that's a tinkerer. They push the boundaries of the rules. Some people do it maliciously for bad things, and some people do it to help people. But a lot of people live in that gray space, especially in the very beginning of like, what is cybersecurity? And so people were afraid that if you were a federal employee coming to those events, you're coming there to like spy on people, to tell on people, to get people in trouble. And so it was almost like, you know, being like the man, right?
You were like the narc thing.
The narc. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So that's why it was kind of a game. And I think over time it became kind of like a joke, but still that's not inviting for someone that doesn't really understand the community yet. You come in like, oh my gosh, they're trying to out people out. So I'm going to be on my P's and Q's and keep my mouth shut.
Yeah.
But, you know, it wasn't until much later that things started to kind of open up for folks.
Interesting. We're going to take just a quick break to tell you about a cool new product that Scott and I discovered. And we'll get back to our guest's amazing Only One story in just a minute.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch. And organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system. So wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm. You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten. As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
So you kind of alluded to this, I think, in your Two Truths and a Lie when you talked about teaching people how to break into different places and pick locks. But can you talk to me about the difference between ethical hacking and cybersecurity?
Ethical hacking is a subcomponent of cybersecurity. So ethical hacking is using those same trade craft that a hacker would use. Someone that is trying to break into a computer or a business to steal, whether it's data or money, they use the same things, but from an ethical perspective. So they try to find the security holes.
If I were worried about my computer being secure, you as an ethical hacker, I could hire you to try to hack into it?
Right. Yep. You could hire somebody that's an ethical hacker. They would spend some time, do some open source intelligence, figure out who you are, all the things that you're about. And then they would slowly but surely pull together this dossier of information about you. And then, you know, do I have an email address that I could use to send a phishing email? A phishing email is an email that looks pretty benign, innocent. Mm-hmm. But if you click it, it might have something that might give access to your email. It might give access to your computer. Very different things that could happen when someone takes one of those actions. But you could hire somebody to test your perimeter and see how safe you are.
And then cybersecurity is the building of those firewalls and keeping people out, right? That's the job there?
Yeah, so cybersecurity is the big umbrella. So all the things on the internet, how do you keep that secure? That's cybersecurity. So everything from the pipelines that you heard about in the news, that has to do with cybersecurity. Everything to keeping your antivirus up to date, your passwords, all of that is under this giant umbrella of cybersecurity.
Interesting. Okay, so here's some of the questions I want. It's not questions. It's stuff I want to talk to you about. Collective Dark Side. You know what that is?
The hacker group?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So they hacked the Colonial Pipeline, right?
Mm-hmm. Allegedly.
Allegedly. Colonial Pipeline allegedly paid out $4.4 million to get control back of their pipeline. That was a Texas-based company, is that correct? Or the pipeline started in Texas?
Mm-hmm.
So this was a few months ago, you know, here in the United States, and this was a pipeline that transported oil from Texas to the East Coast. It's really a tremendous thing. I had no idea that pipeline existed. We're in a drought in California. I'd like to have water pipelined to us that way.
Somebody needs to make that happen for sure.
Somebody needs to make that happen. So the East Coast would depend on this pipeline for their gas and petroleum, right?
Mm-hmm.
Collective Dark Side, like you said, allegedly shut it down. And they were unable to use that pipeline to distribute gas to the East Coast of the United States. And they were asking for a ransom. Is that what you know about it?
What I know about it was definitely a ransomware attack. And if I remember correctly, what the issue was is that they seized the computers that enabled billing. So when people go to get their gas, whenever there's any type of transaction, they use computers to complete that transaction. So
right.
What was actually shut down was that transaction network. So they weren't able to bill any customers. The operational technology or the OT that enabled the oil, the gas, and all that stuff to move was still operational. But they just shut everything down out of not only from a business standpoint, but also a safety standpoint, because they were concerned that if they were going to continue to operate, that it might go even further into their network. But that's me, secondhand knowledge. I wasn't a part of the investigation or anything like that. So please,
right.
if I got any of that wrong, anyone, let me know.
Don't hold them accountable, please.
Oh, they'll let you know.
Yeah.
They will.
They will. And then hackers exploited U.S. government agency software SolarWinds. and JBS Meatpacking was hit. That was another one that was also ransomware, right?
The second one that you were just mentioning was definitely ransomware. But the really interesting one about the SolarWinds attack is something that's really, really starting to bubble up now. And it's called a third-party attack. What happens is you have these really, really dedicated teams, these adversaries, people that want to do bad things. Maybe they want to do some type of espionage. They'll infect something that has maybe mediocre security. And what they do is it's something that a lot of companies need, whether it's an update for a particular software or maybe there's something that somebody needs. They'll affect that to affect a lot of people. And not saying that SolarWinds had mediocre security. I'm sure they had great security. But what happens is once you affect an entire swath of population, whether it's a company or companies across the world, that's a serious issue because you don't know. Now you're running damage control. You're trying to figure out what happened to all these companies. Was I affected? People start spinning their wheels trying to figure out what's going on. But what we're finding out is that these third-party attacks, they can be going on for years without us even really knowing about it. And so they could be taking information, they could be doing changing things, they could be stealing information, they could be doing all sorts of things. So really, companies are starting to think about, how do I manage third-party risk? How do I go into these arrangements with other companies as safely as I can?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think for me, it feels like we should have been thinking like that. I have this picture that American cybersecurity is the best in the world. I don't know if that's true, but that's what I picture. I felt a little betrayed by the fact that, you know, here's a meatpacking plant that's being held for ransom. Here's this pipeline. You know, even if it is this, the billing, the fact that someone was able to get in there and stop it from getting to the public. You know, I shared with you that I was, you know, investigating a story and the North Miami-Dade Police Department was being held for ransomware. They couldn't access their files. So, and when you say third party, you mean like if I'm a hacker and you hire me to hack, is that what you mean?
So it would be like, let's say you use a service for recording podcasts, right? And an attacker knows, okay, everyone's using this particular provider to record their podcast. We're going to affect them so then we get all the juicy takes, all the raw takes, all the outtakes before anybody else can see them, and then we'll put them all over the internet. So that would be the third party, somebody that you hire to do business.
Yes. So Riverside FM, which is what we're using now, if that were right. So I shouldn't have said that. Give somebody an idea. Don't act. Riverside FM.
Can I ask a quick question before you move on? So this thing, like she said, with the Florida Police Department, that level of cyber hacking, is that happening a lot more than most of us were aware of, Chris?
I would say in some ways it probably happens more often than not. Really, the only ones that make it to the headlines are the really big ones, but little ones happen all the time. And what I would want to say is that even though, like, as a country, we are really good at cybersecurity. However, it is such a huge attack surface. So the more interconnected we are, the bigger the attack surface. So the more applications you use, like, you know, and this is not saying anything about the security of like any of these applications, but if you use email, you use Facebook, you use this, you use that, you use all these different things, you're widening your attack surface. So that means that in a digital sense, the likelihood of something bad happening to you increases the more you utilize things out in the world. Because, I mean, we could all just shut our computers off and then do nothing, and then we'd be all right, but then we wouldn't be able to operate. But what happens is the more we use those things, the more things that can go wrong. I'm sure that just about everybody that's even listening to this has been a part of a breach. If you go to something called haveibeenpwned.com, you can plug in your email to see if any of like your old logins have been breached. You can just check it out.
Really?
And see
what's,
see what's going on. Have I Been Pwned? And Pwned is PWND.com. And you can go just plug it in and see if any of your old credentials have been exposed by one of these big breaches.
And the other thing you're saying about this is that third party thing, the thing that's so interesting is now that the surface attack surface area is broadening, these third parties are finding ways to attach themselves to those third parties in a way that we don't sense them, or whoever's right. being attacked doesn't know that they're being attacked. It used to be more of a direct hit, right? Like, you've been hacked. Your email's been hacked. Your bank account's been hacked. But now they're coming in at a much more subtler, quieter level. And it's too late when you find out. You're like,
right.
the whole neighborhood's going down, kind of thing.
Mm. It's really interesting, right? Because I can speak for a bunch of people, just like, we're sitting here feeling so protected as a home, as a household, as a city, state, country. And then these, like, you were talking about, like, the virus-laden phishing emails, right? Mm-hmm. I have clicked on a couple of emails.
Right.
And it's, you know, I'll just do it. It's so matter of fact. And then I actually haven't gotten infected, but I've seen, as soon as I click on it, I knew that I shouldn't have. And then I, right. like, delete it right away. That's probably, you know, the way that I've been trained most to look out for that kind of thing. But is this something that's happening to individuals as well, like ransomware for individuals? Or do you see it more on a corporate level?
It's just worth it for those attackers to go for big businesses, because you're not going to come at me for $5 million. That you're going to be waiting for that check for a long, long time. but you could go after a corporation and demand that type of money. So there was a time, probably about 2015, 2016, when a lot of ransomware was going on, this kind of like bit by bit. I'm going to hit this person. But now what you're really seeing is a really intense focus on affecting big corporations, because big corporations have big budgets and they know that they're going to lose money if they don't either pay the ransom or have some type of ransomware protection. So that's the lucrative target, as it were.
Right. Hun, I think both of our mothers were hit by emails that, well, my mom had one and she opened it and then her computer froze. Mm-hmm. And it gave this alarm with a countdown. But did Nancy have one of those on your mom?
I'm sure she did. Yeah.
It was something like that. Somebody that is probably doesn't work at the same level as you, but our IT guy was able to help her out with that remotely and mm-hmm. get that off her computer. But you're saying that kind of thing isn't the bulk of what's happening. Those are like random things, but mainly
Correct.
People are attacking larger targets.
And even like you're talking about this instance, it could have been a playoff of this thing called WannaCry. WannaCry was this big deal because it was a wormable ransomware, which means you didn't have to have someone do something in order for it to spread. And it was very, very impactful. And then what you saw after that were people that couldn't do that same thing, but were able to like spin up that little say like, oh, now there's a countdown, and they wouldn't even have any ransomware. It would just be like this scary thing. Like, oh my
That's
gosh, I just
was.
Have to go pay. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So people will get scared. They'll pay the money, but there was never any real danger of them having actual ransomware. So
wow.
There's so many games that people try to play to get money, because that's what it is. This malicious hacking game is a money game. People are trying to figure out how to make the most money as quickly as they can. So that's what you really have to look out for.
So let's say, again, to use my mother as an example, next time a message like that appears or something like that happens, what should she do? What should be her first step?
First is think about, was I expecting this email? And if I was expecting this email, see where that email is actually coming from. And if you really want to see what you're clicking, all you have to do is take your mouse and hover that right over. Don't click it, because once you click it, it could be game over. But hover over that link to see exactly what it's going to. If it's, you know, abc123.outoftheunitedstates.com, then it's something you might not want to click. So just look for things like that. Look for incongruencies in the subject and the body of the message. Look for misspellings. There's all sorts of things that you can do to make sure something's legitimate. I think once people understand that this stuff occurs, you have a more watchful eye when it comes to like looking at emails. There are cybersecurity practitioners that will click a phishing email just because they're moving so fast and something looks pretty legitimate, and they'll click it, and you know, then bad things happen. And in fact, we have training, and there are companies that's their business. They craft these phishing emails, and then when someone clicks it, it takes you to like this online training that you got to sit through for an hour, and it teaches you about how to not do some of those things. I think that type of awareness is good for anybody and of for all ages, really.
That's awesome. You get punished.
Bad.
Right, for being impulsive.
So, Chris, also, I'll just ask, because I think it's interesting on the other side of that, on the global stage, this type of thing is now becoming something that everyone is aware of, right? Our elections are being hacked. You know, these big corporations are being hacked. The culprits are in other countries. We can't track them down. We can't enforce any type of constraints on them. And like Laura said, I think a lot of Americans feel like we are, you know, we've always touted ourselves as the technological, we're ahead of everybody in warfare. Is this something that America is catching up to? Is China and Russia ahead of us in this type of game?
It'd be hard for me to speculate. I would say that there are some definitely dominant powers in cybersecurity and just cyber warfare in general. And I mean, it would take a few Wikipedia clicks to figure out who the top players are. But I feel like this is one of those games where it's nonstop. You have to learn every single day. And if you don't, then you're pretty much dead in the water. And so there are folks that have the means, the passion, the purpose, the desire to stay on the top of that upper echelon of cybersecurity and cyber operations. And those countries are going to stay there. And in order for everyone to be on their toes, all the good people that are fighting the good fight, they're going to have to do the same thing. They're going to have to do the same research. We're going to have to do the same, the labs, the exercises, the red teams. Red teaming is when you take some adversarial emulation, you try to pretend like the ethical hacker we were talking about in the beginning of the episode, pretending to be that bad person. So then you know, if someone bad were to do that, this is what would happen. So this is how we're going to prevent that from happening. So doing that over and over and over again is how you can build your protections from not only just at a company level, but even at a nation state level.
Really interesting. Kind of following that same line of questions, how frequently would you say, I know this is just a guess, that foreign powers have interfered with our elections here in the States?
There's no telling. I have no idea.
Actually, let's reverse the question. Have they ever not interfered?
Have they ever not interfered?
Via the computer or on a cyber level?
I think once you open that Pandora's box, like that's something that's always just going to be there. The threat's always going to be there. Whether or not someone's going to take that as like an avenue to affect the United States, who knows? But once that Pandora's box is open, you kind of have to look for it at every turn.
Makes sense.
So do you feel like this is an area where we as Americans in general should be investing more money, should be kind of creating more programs in schools so that more people, to make tech sexy, to make, you know, cybersecurity sexy? Like, do we have enough people going into the field to properly protect us?
It's funny you mentioned that. That's sort of the beginnings of the Hacker Valley Studio podcast, because my co-host Ron Eddings and I, we wanted to make cybersecurity kind of cool. We wanted to give it like a little bit of a hipness to it. And we wanted to attract people from the communities that we come from. I come from Atlanta. He comes from Baltimore. So we wanted to like bring people from those communities. Like, hey, look, we made it. We're able to provide our families a good life based on this thing in technology. Technology is really one of the ways, in our opinion, to bring about that socioeconomic equality. So with that, we're trying to not only promote our voices, our stories, but then the stories of others, because there are going to be people that don't look like me, but look like somebody else that has a powerful story that might inspire someone to do something great. And so that's why I love this podcast thing, is to be able to hear those stories and then share those stories with the world. And so that's how we're trying to attract. Because, I mean, you do have the companies that usually pull from the same sources, like they pull from the Ivy League schools and things like that. But there's actually a really cool program called the Gen Cyber Program, which is supported by the National Security Agency. I had the honor of being one of the speakers at the one in Connecticut. But these kids, they're getting into cybersecurity like high school. Like they're doing things that adults are doing. So the earlier we can introduce this to people, the more it can be a part of daily life. I think the better off people are going to be, and people are going to become harder targets as a part of that.
Yeah. Well, I think that's really cool.
More awareness and more education at every level is kind of what I'm hearing. Like, it's always seemed like this elite thing that I would call this one guy for, and he would know all the answers that I didn't really care to try to translate. And now you're saying, make it hip, make it so that we all understand it, that the conversations aren't like, elitist and out of range.
Exactly.
I love that.
That's another thing I wanted to hit on too. And that's another part of the whole impetus of Hacker Valley is that it isn't mystical, right? I think people like to keep it mystical. So it's like, I know this, you don't pay me like lots of money to do this thing.
Right.
But there's always going to be more money. This isn't a scarcity mindset. This is a growth mindset. Let everybody know what to do so they can keep themselves protected and then continue to work on the really hard problems. Because there's hard problems that you're going to pay an arm and a leg trying to solve. But let's keep everybody safe at a minimum. Demystify it a bit.
And now there's coding camp for kids. I'm on the board of a local independent school. And, you know, one of the things that the board was presented, you know, by the principals of each, the lower, middle, and upper school is kind of a plea to start coding early. Let's start teaching kids coding in kindergarten because they can learn. You know, it's not going to be the sophisticated code that you're able to use at this level, but they can learn the basics. We should be teaching it like another language, like we teach Spanish and French and Mandarin in our school.
Absolutely.
To your point, to communities of color, I love that you guys are two men of color who are talking about this and making it sexy. How else do you feel like what could we be doing better to get it to younger people in communities of color than what we are doing now?
I think it's just about exposure. It's about going, putting boots on the ground to the places that haven't even heard about this as being a way out of the hood, right? Because we're told, you know, in those environments is like, you have to be an entertainer or a sports professional.
Yes. Yes.
When I was in Silicon Valley, and I'm not saying this to boast, but I'm just putting this into context. I was living in a $2.5 million house, doing really good in tech. And then somebody that was delivering food came up to my, knocked on my door, opened it up. It was another brother. And he said, wow, do you play in the NFL? Like that was the first thing he thought of. We're in the hub of technology. And the first thing he saw when he saw me, I mean, of course, I'm a bigger dude. I got some muscle, whatever. Yeah. Do you play for football? I'm sure that added to it. But still, in the hub of technology, the first thing he thought was a sports professional. I'm a technologist. I'm a cybersecurity professional. So I think just exposing people to those things, that is an avenue for you to get out of whatever socioeconomic situation you're in, is going to help change the world.
Ah, oh, I love it. The last thing I was going to ask you about was your podcast, because it's really interesting. We talked to Tara Reed. She's a sister in Chicago who teaches people to code in English. They can make their own apps and code in English. And there are people here and there, right, doing this. But I think it's rare, at least for me, to hear about it. So I was really excited when I met the two of you virtually and that this is what you were doing. So it's Hacker Valley Podcast, right?
Yeah, Hacker Valley Studios, the podcast.
Hacker Valley Studios. Yes, thank you. And you do explore the human element of cybersecurity. Mm-hmm. Programs and technology on your podcast. It's so good. I hope people drop whatever they're doing now and make sure that they subscribe to it and download your episodes and check it out. Because to think of tech and then think of humanizing it is not something that I've ever thought about prior to meeting you, actually.
Well, thank you.
If you inspired me, you're going to inspire a lot of people with that.
I hope so.
Tell me, Chris, where can people find you?
Yeah, it's easy, hackervalley.com. That's where we put everything. We have other shows there as well. We did a series called We Are Here, which is all about Black excellence in cybersecurity. Season 2 of that's going to be coming out later this year. But yeah, you'll find all of our stuff. You'll find out how to connect with us. We're big LinkedIn heads, so definitely find us there. Reach out to us, send us a message, and we'll do our best to reach out to everybody else.
Excellent. This has been great. It could have been longer.
No, I appreciate it. This is an honor.
Thank you for listening to The Only One in the Room. Please join us each Tuesday and Sunday for an incredible brand new Only One interview. And every Friday for On My Nightstand, where I'll be reading something that I love. If you have an Only One story you'd like to share or a piece of writing you'd like to submit, please send it to theonlyonepod@gmail.com. From all of us at The Only One in the Room, we wish you dopeness, health, and prosperity.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Get inspired while learning all about the unique planes of existence. Get the in-depth knowledge you need to help your combat encounters feel impactful, or learn about the origins and pantheons of every race and class the game offers. No stone is left unturned as every edition of the game is explored and explained in a way that benefits players of all different levels of experience. You can expand your TTRPG horizons in a way that's as entertaining as it is educational just by listening. All you have to do is go to your favorite podcast app or YouTube and search for The Dungeon Cast.